So, Sam, this week we had a very special event here in the United States. We had a solar eclipse, a full total solar eclipse. We have partial eclipses and annular eclipses and a couple other different types that I'll go by. We had a full solar eclipse on Monday, and that is the only one we're going to have until the mid-2040s. And so for the next 23 years, we won't have another one. And it just so happens that you recently moved back to Cleveland, Ohio, which was one of the communities that was dead center to the zone of totality as the sun and moon streaked across continental United States. What was your experience in the city, in your community, with the family from start to finish?
Interestingly, my experience begins in 2017 during the last solar eclipse, which the zone of totality went through the Kansas City metro area, which is actually where we lived at the time. Now lived in two different places where there have been total solar eclipses. The problem was, though, the last one, it was very cloudy and we missed it. And I was like very bitter. And like, and then there were all these people talking about how it was this life-changing experience and amazing. And every time I heard it, I was just like consumed by this like unreasonable anger of like, oh my God, I was there and I missed it. So this time I both really wanted to experience it, but also set my expectations very low, given that Cleveland is kind of known for being pretty cloudy and having kind of very capricious weather. I would say actually even probably until like a few minutes before totality, I assumed it was not going to be happening. That being said, there was a lot of buildup here in Cleveland. Schools either had like half days or were entirely canceled. There was an assumption that lots of people were going to be traveling. In the lead up to it, libraries and schools and all different institutions were just giving out eclipse glasses, because this was like everyone knew they were going to be involved with it. And so for me, we ended up watching it in the backyard of my brother's house. And so on the way there, we biked over and you could just see everyone like putting their lawn chairs out in their driveways and kind of getting ready for the thing. The kind of thing, I mean, this is what everyone talks about, the idea that a partial eclipse is qualitatively different from totality, where it's like it's cool and like interesting that you kind of see like a chunk taken out of the sun. But when totality actually hits, like it is this like profoundly strange thing that is often not really captured in kind of like the close-up images. And people talk about it like as like some sort of glitch, or like the world broke. Or I think I saw someone talking about how it was like a like some sort of like broken pixel in the sky or something like that. Like it was a pretty cool experience, but it was also great because I didn't have to travel for it. And so on the one hand, it was very special, but it was also very communal. We all saw the same thing. So it was like a really cool, where it was like both very special, but also very, not universal, because obviously not the entire United States or not the entire world, but universal for the entire community of like the Cleveland area, which was pretty cool to see. It was a pretty special moment.
Well, I think, you know, I want to highlight, you know, Josh Wolf here really opposes TikTok and what social media is doing to our children. And it is interesting to me, because I saw this in New York City, where you're walking around Flatiron District in Manhattan, you know, literally tens of thousands of people looking up to the sky. Everyone has the exact same glasses on. A handful of people bought the really ridiculous ones. But it was this strange community experience where people are reattaching themselves into the natural physical world. Like we were getting out of our offices, we're getting out in front of our iPhones and our laptops, and people are actually taking a look at this natural phenomena, are discussing it. Like, why does it happen? What happens next? Why does it work? There's all these graphs. NASA has a lot of great work. And so I feel like we don't have a lot of these moments where there's an opportunity for science to sort of take the lead story, if you will, in the world. There's always a current event. There's always some news. The inflation rate is going up, down 2%, and that drives everything. And we get so few. Maybe that's why it's special. But it feels to me like there's such a few moments where we're like, we can all just enjoy this like tremendous. I mean, I feel like the James Webb Telescope, maybe when we invent fusion, just a couple of weeks ago, we had the first like xenotransplanted pig kidney going into a patient. I mean, I feel like there's just some of these breakthroughs, some of these moments in science that just aren't captured anymore in sort of our modern world.
Yeah, I think one of the exciting things about this one is that, right, not only was it kind of this universal moment where kind of everyone took a breath and said, okay, let's enjoy this natural splendor. Like there's a great deal of like richness there. It's like one of these things where, okay, not only can you experience it, but the more you kind of learn about how it works and the history behind calculating these things and just trying to understand. And the fact that like it is this relatively rare phenomenon. And we knew, I mean, to the second of like, okay, we're going to be here. This is exactly how long it's going to take. It's unbelievable. And just kind of taking a step back and saying like, there's this like wonder mingled with science. Oftentimes people will say that when you understand science better. It drains away the wonder. Actually, Richard Feynman would often like talk about, like, kind of like push back against this kind of thing very hard. And this article was kind of showing that, like, in many cases, or in many ways, the eclipse is also kind of this exemplar of the more you understand it, the more you can kind of understand the various features, the more wonderful and exciting it gets. It doesn't really take away from the fact that it is this weird glitch in the sky and this kind of profoundly strange moment. You just have so many other points of entry into kind of understanding this weird thing, like whether it's understanding the history, understanding how previous societies have kind of grappled with these kinds of things and tie into mythology or whatever it is, the calculation, the mathematical aspect, the scientific aspect, understanding kind of the nature of the sun. The sun is, it's present, like, around us all the time, and we just don't pay attention. And it's one of these things of, like, okay, in the lead up to the eclipse, don't stare at the sun. But it's also true, I think someone noticed, like don't stare at the sun all the time. But I mean, you can use those glasses at any one point. I mean, like, we tested our glasses out and several days in advance, and you can see the sun. It was like an orb. It wasn't exciting. It wasn't as exciting, but it's cool. You can actually look at the sun with these glasses. And so I think we just kind of, we're so used to things that are just around us all the time, we forget to take a step back and realize how exciting it is. And yeah, it was an unbelievable rare event. But even in the absence of that, it's also pretty cool. And the sun is pretty amazing.
Sam, you might be the only people who tested their glasses in several days in advance, just in case you needed to buy a different pair.
It wasn't as much testing. It was more like, I just wanted to see the sun.
To me, you know, this gets at this concept of instruments, right? Which we've had as a theme on the show and the newsletter and across Lux for a long time. But I mean, as simple as these glasses are, you can't look at the sun. It's very dangerous to look at the sun. You know, these glasses essentially filter out a bunch of light to be able to look at something that's very, very bright. But when we think about, like, the James Webb Telescope, or you look at cryo-EM technology allows you to look at every protein, every molecule that's going inside of a single cell. You know, this ability to actually take a look at something, to actually explore it, to understand it. You know, we had the ability to look at the mathematics of the sun for thousands of years. The Mayans and others, the Chinese, the Egyptians all came up with ways to calculate this. In fact, in many cases, it drove mathematics. It was the problem to be solved of what was taking place here. But it was actually, we had to go so many thousands of years forward to get telescopes and astrolabes and actually to be able to calculate with tools. And to me, that's the, like, the wonder of science for me is it's not just what happens in the real world. It's that connection between the inventions that we're putting together, being able to interpret what is actually taking place.
So interestingly, what I understand, so there was this ancient Greek gear mechanism known as the Antikythera mechanism, I believe, where it was found, like, off the coast of an island of the same name, but it's, like, about, like, 2,000 years old, and it was found in this shipwreck, and it is this very sophisticated calculation mechanism for, actually, among other things, for calculating when solar eclipses are going to happen. And so there is this kind of, and in addition to kind of the mathematical calculation, kind of driving a mathematical understanding, there is this deep history of tool creation for understanding celestial phenomena. Now, like, this ancient Greek mechanism, people have created Lego versions of these kinds of things. We now have toys that can encapsulate this kind of information, which is unbelievable. And so I just love this idea, both the kind of the democratizing element as well as the cutting edge element.
You know, it comes to mind around location. You know, the GPS satellites, hundreds of millions of dollars in geostationary orbit. You have to put them up there, launch them, maintain them, etc. And then you go back to the 5th century BC in China with the idea of the southern pointing chariot, which was a design that once the chariot was pointing south with the little figure, the wheels would move, that as the chariot moved, would actually maintain the direction of the figure pointing the same direction. So no matter which way the chariot went, it would always be pointing the same direction. And so it's like sort of the first compass, pre-magnetism. So the evolution, the advancements, I mean, I just feel like, you know, sometimes we have to take a step back from the sun turning off for a couple of minutes to really understand just how much light and Lux and enlightenment has come in our world. But that's our quick 10-minute episode. Sam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.